And we're holding on Ayin Vav Amud Beis, 11 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah about cases where an animal's limb is broken. We're talking about in the hind legs particularly. There can be places where it's actually trefa. But in any case, we need to talk about when it can possibly heal. So we said if it's covered. In Roiv HaBosakayim, most of the flesh around that break is intact, then not only the animal as a whole will be kosher, but even that individual limb will be kosher because eventually it'll recover and the bone will knit back together. So let's talk about details with that. What happens if the bone breaks and some of it is sticking out, so a compound fracture? If there's still skin and flesh covering most of the break, as we'll see in a second how we define the most, mutter, then that limb will be mutter in lav, and if not osir, then the limb itself will be osir. And as we learned yesterday, what it actually could be is there could even be, depending where on the leg the break is, the animal as a whole might even be tricky. On the face of it, yotza l'chutz means, in other words, exactly that, compound fracture, where it's sticking out, although the pre-chodesh brings a possibility, it might actually be that the bones are still inside where they belong, but the flesh above them has gotten peeled away or whatever, as you have. In any case, then that fracture is exposed to the air. So the Gemara says, the Kamar Ruboy, how do we define the majority of it? So Ki Osa Rav Dini, when Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar Rav Yechanan, he said that Rav Yechanan had said, Roiv Oivyei, that means most of the thickness of the bone. Meaning, in other words, it actually explains. So you have the bone has a certain thickness to it. So now what you have is a little bit of it is sticking out, but most of the thickness, most of the bone is still inside where it belongs. Others say that the Dinyan said Roiv HaKeifer, it has to be most of the circumference around it. Meaning, in other words, if it actually explains that according to that way of looking at it, it wouldn't matter how much of the thickness of the bone is exposed. Even for example, Rashi says, even if let's say the bone is turned from its normal position and the entire inner surface of the bone is exposed to the outside, nevertheless, as long as you have roiv hekif, most of the circumference is surrounded by flesh and skin, then eventually it will heal and regenerate. Tosfos makes a different point as well, and another way of looking at it is, after all, never mind how much the bone is sticking out or whatever, as Rashi talks about, you also have the consideration that bones are not perfectly round in cross section, they're oval, sometimes even they come to a point closer to one end. So therefore it's very easy to have that you can have roiv oivyei, most of the thickness of it is surrounded by flesh, but it won't be roiv hakeifer, it won't be most of the circumference, and vice versa, depending whether, for example, the flesh is located at the thick end of that thicker, rounder end side of the bone or the thinner pointier side. Because we have these two different versions of what Rav Dimi has said, then therefore we actually require both, that it should be the flesh should cover most of the thickness and most of the circumference. So according to Rashi, in other words, the point is that you can only have a very little bit of the bone sticking out. It still has to be that most of the thickness of the bone is still within the body and not sticking out. And in addition, you also have to have that area is in fact mostly surrounded by is mostly surrounded by flesh. Okay. So further in this connection, the Gemara says, Ula says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that for this purpose, skin is the equivalent of flesh. So if you have a break in the bone and it's covered just by skin, then that would be then that would be good enough also. So the Gemara asks, Omelet of Nachman Ula. So Rav Nachman says to Ula, how could you say that? Why are you saying that Rav Yechanan is saying skin is like a flesh? Instead, rather, what you should say is, say more lachumra, that the skin can combine together with the flesh. In other words, it can be part one and part the other, but not just skin by itself. After all, the braisa had said that you need skin and flesh, and that implies that you need some of one and some of the other. So Ullah says, no, we learn the braisa as saying skin or flesh, one or the other is fine, even if you don't have, so Rashi explains, even if all the flesh has been removed, and all you have is the skin, as long as it's covering most of the thickness of the bone and most of the circumference, then you're fine. Okay, that's one version. Ikadamri, another version, Amar Ullah Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Ur Mitzdara for Basar. In the second version, Ullah says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that the skin can combine together with the flesh, so it can't be all skin, it has to at least be half flesh. Amar Rabbi Nachman the Ullah, and in the second version, Rabbi Nachman says to Ullah, V'lay Mamar Ur Mashal Basar L'Chumra, why don't you say L'Chumra, that it has to mostly be flesh, and then a minority of it can be made up of skin only. Where do you get that it's good enough if it's half flesh and half skin? So Ullah answers in the second version, well, I can tell you, I know the story of a case where Rabbi Yechanan allowed it when it was only half flesh. There was a young pigeon in the house of Rabbi Yitzchak where it broke its leg. The Urmit Stana for Bosa have, and maybe had half flesh and half skin, but also the Kamei Rabbi Yechanan that was covering the break, but also the Kamei Rabbi Yechanan, and it was brought to Rabbi Yechanan, but actually Rabbi Yechanan declared the bird kosher. So you see that half and half is good. On the labor, Rabbi Nachman says, Bar Goizel Kamet, no, because you're talking about a young pigeon, that's different. Bar Goizel Dirakit Shiny, that's different because it's softer, and therefore its skin is also softer, and it can be considered for that purpose like flesh, but by an animal that has tough skin, maybe not, maybe you actually need a majority of the break to be covered by flesh in order for it to be kosher. So we'll take up that point. We'll take up that point again on the next Amud on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. But first, the Gemara says that let's talk about another possible thing that you could have there covering the break. Aside from we talk about skin and we have flesh, we also have to consider giddin. Where again, giddin in Gemara terminology has a wide variety of different meanings. Yesterday we learned about the service of giddin, where giddin over there means tendons. Sometimes it can also mean nerves, sometimes it can also mean blood vessels. Here we're going to talk about ones that are going to harden, that are going to become tougher. So the most logical explanation for them would be tendons. But for example, later on in the sixth paragraph of Amasepta, we're going to talk about the Gid Hanosha, where the Gid Hanosha is the sciatic nerve. The word "git" basically means anything warm and skinny in the body. It's even sometimes used for the male organ, which has the same basic shape as well. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Hanu gidin rakin." There was a case of an animal with a break in one of its limbs where there was soft gidin that were partially covering the break. But also the kamei de Rabba, and it was brought to Rabba as a shayla. On the side of it, it says it should be Rava, actually, because we're soon going to have that. A papa asks him. The papa was a talmud of Rava. We don't find him as a talmud of Rabba. Rava says lamai lechushlahu. What should we be concerned for? Of course, it should be fine. There shouldn't be any problem. First of all, Chada, the Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Gidim Shesefen Lahakshis, Nimna Alein Bepesach. First of all, Rabbi Yechanan says that Gidim that right now are soft, but later on are going to become hard, you can register to eat them for the Korban Pesach. You know you have to eat, there's a mitzvah to eat the Korban Pesach, and you're not supposed to leave any of it over, but you can only, and we know that for the Korban Pesach, unlike any other Korban, everybody has to be pre-registered, signed up, before the Korban is shechted to eat from it. Now, you can only sign up when you're going to be eating something, and you're going, only going to be yotzeh, when you're eating something that is normally edible. So now you have, now a Korban Pesach is an animal within its first year, so many structures that later on in the body are going to become hard in that age animal are soft. So in Pesachim it talks about And Chachma talks about, so let's say, for example, the bones are always going to be hard. But let's say, for example, you have certain cartilages that in a baby, you have certain things, certain areas where in a baby animal is going to be cartilage, and in the adult animal, they might turn into bone. Or in our case of a year, you have gidin, which in a baby animal, a yearling animal, are going to be soft, and later on they're going to get hard. So Rabbi Yochanan holds minyan aleihem. You could register just that you're going to eat those for the Korban Pesach because those are considered flesh. So first of all, says Rabbi, you see that such gidim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, are considered flesh. Now Tosfos points out, so, you know, there we're going to see in a second that Rabbi Shlokish argues, fine, the basic question is over there, do we go according to how they are right now or how they're going to be later on? Why is that relevant over here? Tosfos says, because after all, he's mentioned Ur Basar, as long as it can be considered Basar, then it would be considered then it would be effective and help the break to heal. Well, then if the question is, do we consider them Basar? It seems according to Rabbi Yochanan, we do. Now, which Gidim are we talking about? So Rashi explains in Pesachim that specifically Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are going to be arguing about the Gidim of the tendons or ligaments of the neck. Tosfos says though that no, because here we're talking about the leg, and for various other reasons no. So we're talking about the Gidim in the legs. We're talking about the tendons or the ligaments in the leg. Of the animal, where it's a baby, they're soft, but eventually they're going to become hard. So first of all, says Rabba, for that reason, because Rabbi Yochanan is saying that they're considered flesh, as far as the Korban Pesach, therefore they should be considered flesh over here as well, and therefore they should help save the bone that now eventually it'll knit back together, and the animal as a whole will be kosher, and the limb itself will be kosher. But besides that, says Rabba, our Torah calls some money, and so you see, we know the Torah is always careful about Jewish money, not to waste it, so we should be able to be makel and be able to consider it like flesh. The Torah Chaim explains basically that Rabba doesn't know whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan or Rish Lakish. So first of all, according to Rabbi Yochanan, no question, it's like flesh. And second of all, even if we're not sure that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, maybe we should be made on the towns on the grounds of a Torah Chasim. But Omale Rapapa the Rabba, but Rapapa says to Rabba, Rav Shimon and Lakish, first of all, you have the opinion of Rish Lakish that disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan on that, and says that such gidim are not considered flesh, because eventually they're going to become hard and be inedible, and therefore even now in the baby animal where they're considered edible, then nevertheless you still can't have that a person is registered and is going to be yotzei the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach with that. So that's first of all, the Isur Doraisa. Second of all, you're talking about a potential Isur Doraisa over here, because the broken limb might be also as a Rosh HaSada today, as we've talked about before, or maybe even the animal as a whole, depending where the break was. And you're saying what to be concerned about. In other words, Torah Chaim teaches out, but Papa is saying, on the contrary, look at Rish Lakish, it's certain that it's not like Vosser, and even if it's a Suffolk, and since it's a Suffolk of Torah, how can you use a Torah Chos Amamon and Shoy Yisrael for that purpose? So Rabbah was quiet and didn't answer. Well, why was he quiet? You're saying Rapapa's premise is that after all we have to take Rish Lakish's opinion into account. So what? For Amar Rava, there's another reason why to say that it's Rava in the story over here, but not Rava, because Rava himself is the one who says Bahani Tzlas. So Halacha is like Rish Lakish. Only in three cases. There's there are three cases that are all brought in the Sefer Gittin. In the Sefer Yevamos, two of them also come up in Baba Basra. So the halacha is like Rish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan, and only in those three. So why doesn't Rabba or Rava in our story over here just say to the Papa, you're challenging me from Rish Lakish's opinion, but the fact is the halacha is not like Rish Lakish. And the answer is Shiny Halacha, Dahodabe Rabbi Yochanan Lagabe Rabbi Shimon Lakish. This is different because actually Rabbi Yochanan himself changed his mind and ended up conceding to Rish Lakish. The Amalei, namely, as follows. Later on in our Masechta, we're going to learn, we have the Perek Ha'Ovah HaRoitev, the ninth Perek of our Masechta, which is going to be a lot about the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara of meat and various parts of the animal like that. Now, you have another example over there of something which at the beginning is soft and later on becomes hard. One of them is the skin of the head of a young cat. So it's soft, it's meat-like. So the question is, and the question becomes then, is it considered like flesh as far as Tumas Oichlin and Tumas Nevelis, where again, if the animal was left to mature, then that skin would become hard and tough and leathery and inedible, but now as a baby, it's still edible. So the Shlokish and Rabbi Yochanan have a discussion about that point. Rabbi Yochanan says that it's not going to be metamed Tumas Oichlin, because even though now it's soft, eventually it's going to become hard. So the Shlokish says, wait a minute, there's a Mishnah there that mentions the skin as one of the things that's considered like flesh. And the Amalei, and Rabbi Yochanan tells him, I'm Taknitani, don't start up with me. I learned that Mishnah is only a Loshin Yochid. It's only an opinion of one Tana, meaning that we don't follow it. Even though Rabbi Yochanan himself says, that's usually halacha kastam Mishnah, but here he says, Tosfos explains, it doesn't just mean that he says that I learned that this Mishnah is like Rav Shimon, it means that he actually has a version of the Mishnah that actually explicitly says that that's only the opinion of Rav Shimon, and therefore it's not a kastam Mishnah, and therefore he's not obligated to follow it. So we see from that, in the same way over here, when you have these gibbon, which right now are soft and eventually are going to be hard, then it comes out in the end, Rabbi Yochanan ended up saying that no, they're not considered like flesh. And in fact, you cannot register for the Korban Pesach for them, and for the same reason, they shouldn't be considered flesh as far as the halachas of a broken bone over here. Tosfos points out, I mean, that sometimes you can have something which is barely edible if you cook it enough. And the skin that we're talking about, or these gibbim or whatever, conceivably could do that. But nevertheless, you could still say that when it comes to the Korban Pesach, Rabbi Yochanan might still say that you could eat them by the Korban Pesach, because after all, if you cook them enough, even in a mature animal, they might conceivably be edible. But as far as the halachas of a broken bone over here, and as far as the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, we wouldn't say we would draw that distinction. Tosfos points out another point as well. Okay, so if we have two contradictory statements of Rabbi Yochanan, one by the Korban Pesach that you could eat the gibbon, and the other one by the skin of the head of the young calf, as far as Tumas Oichlin, that Rabbi Yochanan said that that's only a das yochid. Well, if we're saying that he changed his mind and says therefore that appoints the chachamim and that this would be the halacha, that such things that are going to become hard later are considered hard already now, how do you know he changed his mind and held that way? Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe afterwards he said, you know what, that Mishnah is not only a das yochid, it appoints everybody. And Tosfos answers, because since we have a machlokas here, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, about the gibbon in connection with the Korban Pesach, more logically, if Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind, it would have been to concede to Rish Lakish. So therefore, in other words, in the end, Rabbi Yochanan also agrees that such gibbon are not considered flesh. Therefore, when Rapapa challenged Rabba, how can you be following Rabbi Yochanan saying, I'm going to show you Yisrael, and Rabba was quiet? The reason is because even though normally the halacha would be like Rabbi Yochanan against Rish Lakish, here we see that Rabbi Yochanan himself changed his mind and ended up agreeing with Rish Lakish that they have to look not just at what they're like now, but what they're going to be like later when they get hard. So in other words, in the final analysis, therefore, when you have these gidim that are eventually going to become hard, then no, they don't help us as far as this broken bone. You need actual flesh, actual muscle, not gidim that are eventually going to become hard. Another case, it happened once that there was an animal broke a bone and the bone was sticking out partially. The ishtikal kutisamine, and a chip of the bone afterwards broke off. So not only there was a compound fracture over here with the bone sticking out, but also of the bone that was there, a chip wasted away, Rashi said, and fell off. Also, so the case was brought to Abaya, is it going to be kosher or not? Shayat lost it really. Abaya held over the question for three regalim. The Sholosh regalim, the Chachamim, would gather together, and then Abaya wanted to consult with them on each of the following Sholosh regalim and discuss it with them whether it would be kosher or whether it would be kosher or not. Now, of course, the animal is not necessarily going to still be alive by that point, or the Yaakov Emden points out. I mean, one way or the other, either the break is going to heal by that time, or it's not going to at this point, because it's not really a live question anymore. So one part, first of all, there is an explanation that actually brings an explanation in Yeromus that regally sometimes doesn't mean Sholosh Regolim, it means Yod sites of the Chachamim. They would gather together on the Yod site of a great Talmid Chacham in order to learn Torah and in order to learn and discuss Torah in his memory. So therefore, Tlosa Rigli over here could be three Yod sites like that, which may have been fairly close together, and in that case it could still be a live question. But if we say it means actual Regolim, as in the Sholosh Regolim, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, fine, it's not going to be an actual practical question as far as this animal, but it would still be more. The person is going to want to know for the future. If this happens again, then what's going to be the deal? So Abaye is not so ready to pass it on yet. He wants to consult with the other Chachamim over a period of Sholosh Regolim. Omer Rav Adav Amasna. So Rav Adav Amasna says to the guy who owns the animal, Zul Kamed Rav, Rav Yosef Achoma, instead of waiting for Abaye, go to Rav, the son of Rav Yosef Achoma. This is regular Rav in all of Shas. The Harifa Sakine, his knife is sharp, meaning he has a wide open heart as far as Svara, unlike Abaye, who's uncertain about this. Rav will be able to give him an answer on the spot. In fact, they have an expression in Bavli Basra where one of the other Chachamim of that period, of Adav Ava, says he used to tell prospective Talmidim, he would tell them instead of going and gnawing on bones in Abaye's yeshiva, come eat fat meat in Rava's yeshiva. In other words, in Rava's yeshiva, you'll find much greater acumen in learning and teaching Torah than you will by Abaye. And so here we have an example where Abaye wasn't sure. He's going to have to consult with all the other Chachamim, whereas Rav Adav Amasna tells him Rava is going to be able to give you an answer on the spot. So also, if I may, sure enough, he came to Rava. You can assume, by the way, at this point, it may be that Rava wasn't so well known yet. The fact that Rav Adav Amasna has to identify him as Rava Breder of Yosef Bachoma may imply that at this point, Abaye is the senior Rosh Hashiva, and everybody knows him, whereas Rava is maybe not so well known yet. Anyway, also a Kamei, so the guy comes to Rava. Omar, so Rava says, Mechti Nishver Etzim V'yotzel Achotznan. Look, in the Braisa, we talked about where the bone is broken and it's stuck out. And we talked about as long as there's Uru Botsa, as long as there's skin and flesh covering it. Mali Nafal, Mali Yisei, what's the difference whether a piece of it falls off afterwards or not? Sorry. Either way, as long as you have Uru Botsa, then it's fine and it doesn't matter that a little chip of it broke off. Next, Amalei Ravina L'Rava, Mislaket Mahu. So Ravina asks Rava a number of questions. We're saying that you have to have roiv of the bone covered with skin and flesh. And fine, we're saying that as the Papa had said on the previous Amalei, you need roiv oivya and you need roiv hakeifoy. You need most of the thickness and most of the circumference of the bone to be covered with flesh. You know, a little bit of it can be skin, and then that'll promote healing in the bone. What happens though, Ravina asks, with slaket mahu? What happens if that flesh is just collected, a little here, a little there? It's not continuous, but there's some of a sudden shred of it here, a shred of it there, all together. If you add it up, it'll come out to most of Oivya and Hekefrey, but it's not in one place. Also, misroisis mahu. What about if that flesh was very thinly spread to cover most of it, but it's just a very thin layer, basically. Mismasmus mahu. What about if the flesh is mismasmus, which means that it's wasting away? So we want to interject, take a dumb mismasmus. What do we mean mismasmus for that purpose? How rotted does it have to be? Means when it's unhealthy enough that a doctor would cut it away when he's trying to cure the animal or a person with the equivalent. So when it's reached that point that it would be cut over the gangrenous or whatever, then they have Ravina's question whether it would still be a valid covering for the broken bone. Tosfos points out that in the previous Perek, when we talk about Trefus, we had cases where mismasmus, and we consider that something is completely gone. But that was talking about, Tosfos says, as far as things like lungs and other gibim, where the Trefus depend on them. But here we're not talking about the Trefus is fundamentally about the bone. Maybe even the flesh above it is rotted away to some extent. Maybe nevertheless it still has the ability to protect the bone and give it the chance to heal. And more questions from the sum of the Gemara. The Chachamim also had a question. Nikav Mahu, what about if this flesh that's surrounding the bone has a hole in it? So nothing of it is missing, but is that hole enough to make it that now that flesh doesn't have the ability to promote healing in the bone anymore? Niklas Mahu, what about if it was peeled away? So it's not, it's not tightly attached to the bone. It's there, but it's not attached. And Rashi continues that if you're going to say that in that case it might be fine because the flesh is intact, what about? You can ask Nisak Mahu, what about if this flesh is cracked? Or what about Nito Shlisha Tachtan Mahu? Well, what happens if, for example, of that flesh, the lower third that was closest to the bone has been removed, and the other two thirds are still there? In other words, if we say Rashi explains, if you're going to say that if it's peeled away and not tightly adhering to the bone, it's still fine. But would that apply even if you have only two thirds of the thickness of the flesh, or do you have to at least have all the thickness of it? Well, the Gemara says Toshma, at least as far as that last one, we can answer the question. We said on the previous Amud that skin is considered like flesh. Now, if skin is effective, then surely two thirds of the thickness of the flesh ought to work. And in fact, the Rashba points out when you get down to it, there's flesh between the skin and the bone. So here, if we're saying that skin is good enough, then that implies it doesn't have to be tightly adhering to the bone. So the Gemara answer is no, because Dilma de Kona Mashka Gigay. No, because you can answer that all those cases where he's saying that skin alone is enough might be where the skin is holding on to its own. In other words, you're assuming that you're talking about it's a place where there was flesh and then the flesh is gone and all you have left is the skin. No, we should be talking, Ula could be talking about, for example, you have lower down on the leg, right above the heel, for example, where you have the leg there narrows a great deal, and you have very little, if any, flesh over there, and you have basically just skin covering the bone. So there, the skin is tightly attached to the bone, because that's the normal place. It grows that way. So then you could say that the skin is good enough in a place like that, but not necessarily in a place where there was supposed to be flesh under the skin. And you don't, then not necessarily can you answer from Ula's statement. Tosfos brings a different girsa instead of D-Day, brings a girsa from Rabbeinu Hanano and Rabbeinu Tam, that it's actually instead of the dalad, it's ratios. Virei means it's moisture or it's it's mucus-like layer. So in other words, when you have the skin at that point is attached by like a mucosal layer to the bone, and therefore it holds tightly together, and therefore it'll help the bone heal. As opposed to, in other words, you're talking about a case where the flesh has been scraped away, and all you have is the skin, and the skin doesn't have that veer, it doesn't have that mucosal-like layer that sticks tightly to the bone. Not necessarily is that going to be affected. So all these questions are left open, and therefore all misafik, we say that it's awesome. Next, similarly in this connection, Omer Ravashi. So Ravashi says, here's another similar question. Kiavein and Beira Papi, when we were in the yeshiva of Rapapi, it very long, we had the question, Nikdar Kamin Tabanas. What about if that flesh that's surrounding the bone was cut away like a ring? So in other words, you have a certain point in the bone where there's a break. Then you have, so instead of now like this, usually of course the flesh is going to be continuous along the length of the bone. Here what you have is there's a cut around the circumference of that flesh above and below the break. So you have the whole break is covered by flesh, or the majority of it anyway, but that flesh is not attached to the rest of the flesh, to the rest of the muscles of the animal. So Mahu, what would be the din? Is that flesh still going to be effective, or no, because it's not attached to the rest of it? Opashatna, and says Ravashi, we answered it Mahoda Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, that from what Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, where he says, Dovah the Sha'alti v'chachamim v'loroifim. I asked the Chachamim and the doctors, is there a way of making that work? The Omru, and they said, Mesarte v'etzem, what you can do is you take a different bone, not a bone from this animal, but a bone from elsewhere, and you scrape that area of the ring of flesh. And that causes it to bleed, and the bleeding then causes it to start developing scar tissue where eventually umale arufa, and then eventually it'll heal and join back together with the rest of the flesh, and then you'll, and then it'll be fine, then it can protect the bone. Rashi points out, this is a common medical practice, is to do that, is when you need two things to reattach, that they, even nowadays, I think sometimes maybe they do that when they have a hole or a fistula or something that's not supposed to be there, then I think sometimes what they do is basically they cut it in such a way that will force it to bleed and then to put together various enzymes and whatnot to start to start the healing process. Now, why are we saying Dafka to use a bone for that purpose? The Gemara points out, go alpha parzola, but if you were to use an iron scalpel for that, then it wouldn't be such a good idea. Mizraf zorek, it's instead going to cause infection. Amar Papa, who the Kona Gami today, and again, Papa says, all of this is only going to work when the bone we see is holding its own, and that this flesh is tightly attached to the bone, which showing, in other words, that it's starting to heal, but not, as we said before, not necessarily if the flesh is only loosely attached to the bone. And again, in Tosfos, probably over here also would be, instead of didei, would be rirei, that it's attached together by that mucosal-like layer that holds them together. So those are the dinim of grapes in an animal's bone in a nutshell. So in detail. So to summarize, in a nutshell, therefore, so to have if the grape is mostly surrounded by odor bosser, and we're saying sometimes you can have half bosser and half herb, but it does have to be in places where the skin naturally adheres to the bone, then it's fine, and then the animal will be kosher and that limb will be kosher. But if you don't have a proper covering of skin and flesh over the break, it's around too little of the bone, or the various stachys, we have a hole in it or a slit in it or whatever, then we would say sometimes definitively, sometimes misafik, that the limb is going to be osir, and depending where the break is in the leg, the animal as a whole could be osir. Okay. Mishnah says, getting back now to dinim of unborn babies, a shofar does a behemoth motza b'shulya. Person shafts an animal and finds a shulya, an amniotic sac in it, which is what the baby normally grows inside. Now, normally, you would have the shulya will contain the baby. In this case, let's say even you found that let's say, for example, the shulya is empty, whether because the baby already came out and left the shulya behind, or whether because the baby liquefied in the womb, and then you have the shulya is full of that. Anyway, all you allowed to eat it, nefesh ha-yafa techlena, a person who is not finicky can eat it. Nefesh ha-yafa literally means the nice soul, but it's a euphemistic way of saying somebody who is not squeamish and not easily nauseated by such things. So if a person is not nauseated by techlena, then he can eat it. It's not considered ev menachai because it also becomes mutter when you shech the mother. You do have a mitzvah in the Torah, bal teshachzu, you're not allowed to do things that are disgusting, but in other words, the point is, in other words, if a person doesn't find it disgusting, then he doesn't say, hey, let him eat it. The Maharshal and the Moshe Feinstein actually explain that what it means is most people would not be allowed to, if you have a particular person, because of Baal Teshatsu, if you have a particular person who's not squeamish, then he doesn't say, hey, he can eat it. Continues the mission of Enim Atama, Lo Tumas Ofen, Lo Tumas Nevelis. This amniotic sac would not have the tumor of food, because it's not normally considered food, and it wouldn't have the tumor of Nevelis. Well, by default, in other words, if you didn't plan to eat it, it doesn't have the tumor of food, because it's not normally food, and it doesn't have the tumor of nevela either, because it's not considered, for that purpose, it's not considered flesh. But chishiv aleha, if he thinks about it and decides that he is going to eat it, if he's one of these nefesh ha-yofa types, he plans to eat it, then it is metama chumas oichlin avaloi chumas nevela, but even then it won't have the chuma of nevela, because his thought can make it food, but it can't make it into meat that should be considered nevela. Okay, Mishnah continues, shuya shuyotsim of tzasa, if an amniotic sac partially comes out of the mother's body, Asura ba dwalim before it was shechted, asura ba achila, then you're not allowed to eat it after the mother was shechted. because even if you don't find, even if you don't find the baby in there, even if you just find liquid in there, now Rashi points out, in other words, because this is going to get into the question, when is the baby animal considered born? At the beginning of our Perek, we talked about that it's considered born when the head comes out or most of its body. Now, let's say over here, you have an amniotic sac, but no baby, because it all got liquefied. Nevertheless, it might be that the part that came out might be what contained what used to be the head of the baby, and then the baby is going to be considered born, and therefore the shiria as a whole would be also. And then the shita of the mother wouldn't be matter it, as we learned earlier in our text. Because you should know, simen vlad be'isha, simen vlad be'behema, you should know that a shulia is a sign, whether by a woman or whether by an animal, that there was a baby over there. So now we have to be concerned that even though we find the amniotic sac empty or just filled with liquid, and in that liquid might be the dissolved remnants of the baby that was there and then dissolved in the womb. So therefore, when some of the shulia comes out, you have to be concerned that was the head end, and therefore it'll be also. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Hamavakeres. What about if this animal is giving birth for the first time, and if the baby was a boy, if the baby was a male, then it would have the kedusha of a bechor, as we'll learn in the next Masechta Bechoros. So then she kiris shulia. So now if it miscarried an amniotic sac. And again, there was definitely a baby in it, but we don't know what happened to the baby. It may have liquefied. So now you have to send it to the plug and you have to throw it to the dogs. Now, the meaning, in other words, so you can't eat it, we said, but on the other hand, you don't have to treat it with the kedusha of a bechor, because you have a few different possibilities. It may be that it was a female, and for the female doesn't have a kedusha of bechor in the first place. Second of all, it might have been a male that was deformed and does not have the kedusha of a bechor, examples that we'll talk about in the Gemara, and therefore when you add those different considerations together, then we have enough of a likelihood, or even a preponderant likelihood, that this shulia did not contain a baby that would have kedusha of bechor, and therefore you can just throw it to the dogs and they can eat it. As opposed to, had we been concerned that it has the kedusha of a bechor, then we would actually have to bury it. It would be also banan. Over mukdoshim, what about if instead of a regular chulin animal that's about to give birth for the first time, what if this animal that miscarried and then that expelled the shulia was an animal of karbonis, such as a shlomim or a chatas, to cover? Then that amniotic sac and that shulia has to be buried, because by such animals, it doesn't matter whether the baby was male or female, either way it has the kedusha of the mother. So now, then you have something of a korban, which is also to eat, and then that's, therefore it's also bahana, so therefore the only thing you can do is bury it. Now the Mishnah continues, by the way, in Korban also of Parashas Zerachim, now you would not be allowed to bury it by crossroads, which was a superstitious thing that people would do sometimes in those days as a superstitious thing, so that this way the animal in the future won't miscarry. So you're not allowed to do that, because the Torah tells us you're not allowed to do superstitious practices. The in Korban also the Ilan, you also can't take that amniotic sac and hang it on a tree, which was another superstitious practice that the Goyim in those times would do, both of these, the intention of that to make it that supernaturally, that this way the animal will no longer miscarry, and it may doubt to Hamari, because the Torah tells us you don't have to follow in the ways of the Goyim, and these are superstitious practices that the Goyim do, and therefore we're not allowed to follow them.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Gemara says, first of all, Menohanimili, where do we know the point that we said, we started by saying that the shulia, in a normal case, will be mutter when you find the shulia inside the mother, when you shecht it, then you're allowed to eat it. So how do we know that? So to turn around, we learn in the Braisa, whole behemoth techelu, as we talked about at the beginning of the parak, when the pasuk says when the pasuk says that the b'chol behema, that all animal and that has split hooves and shoes, it's cut, but behema among the animals oisa techelu, that you can eat, and he said behema in the animal comes to include anything that you find inside the animal. That's what we talk about at the beginning of the parak. That's how we know that the baby animal found inside David's mutter with the mother's shita. So now also the rabbis is a shulia, so it comes to include also the amniotic sac. So again, most people are not going to eat it, but if you have a person who's not squeamish, then he can eat it. So you would think that applies even if it started coming out before the shita. No, kama by not osa. Therefore, the pasuk finishes it. You can eat. Where osa means there's a meal. It's osa. Velo shul yasa. It means the animal itself, but not its amniotic sac. So in other words, if you have two implications of the pasuk, one that the amniotic sac, the shilya, is mutter, and one that it's also, then the distinction is going to be whether it started coming out. So they want to ask, Mechti, ain't shilya below blood? But listen, we just established that there's no shilya without a baby inside, and even if we don't find a baby, it means it just got liquefied and got mixed in with the amniotic fluid, lomali kros. So what do you really need the pasuk for? Anyway, of course it will. Of course, when it starts coming out, then it's going to be also because, like you said, the baby, part of the baby that would have been made, that was considered, like it was born, would already be considered, would may have already come out already. And the answer is, you're right, for asmachta ba'alma, the pasuk is really only there for an asmachta. Primarily, it's there for the drasha that we learned at the beginning of the parak, where, for example, if you cut off a part of the baby inside the womb and leave it inside the womb, versus you cut off a part of an animal itself, a mother animal itself, and leave it inside the body, so we have the distinction at the beginning of the parak that in the first case it's mutter, and in the second case those pieces are also. So primarily it's for that drasha. We can also use it as an asmachta for this matter of the shilya, but really the reason why the shilya starts coming out, it's also is because along with the part that came out may have contained the head end of the baby. All right. We said in the mission of Enimatama, we said that ordinarily this amniotic sac is not considered food, and it's not considered a nevela, so therefore it doesn't have the trauma of food or nevela, and then we said if the person decides that he's going to eat it, then now it has the trauma of food. So the question is, what about the skin of a donkey is very tough and disgusting, and normally nobody would eat it. But suppose a person cooked it, suppose a person stewed it to the point where it softens, mahu, what would be the din? So last of my, as far as what particular case is Yitzchak Bar Nachman asked about, if you're asking whether now it has the tumor of food, now of course it's the skin of a donkey, a yid's not going to be allowed to eat it, but the point is, if it's considered food, then at least it would have the tumor of food, so now it would be metame or the food that it touches. But if the question is that tumas oichlin, we already have a braisa about it, either tumas nevelas tanena, and you want to know whether it has the tumor of nevela, we also have a braisa about it. So what's the Yitzchak Bar Nachman's question? What is the Yitzchak Bar Nachman's question? Namely, Tumas Oichlin, where do we see about Tumas Oichlin Tanya? We don't know the Or about Shulya in the time in Tumas Oichlin. The skin of an animal or the Shulya do not have Tumas Oichlin. Because neither of them are edible. The skin is too tough and the Shulya is too disgusting. But if you stewed the skin until it became soft enough that it could be eaten, and that Tosfos points out it would still be ayudam tzat, it would still be just be barely edible, but nevertheless in principle it could be edible. So if you did that, if you cooked it, v'achshuya shechishu v'alea, or if you thought about the shuya, as we said in our Mishnah, that you plan to eat it, then the tamen tumas oichlin, then either one of those now will be able to have tumas oichlin. So therefore, so you have the answer. So the answer is that the skin of a donkey is normally not edible. Whether there's any skin is normally not edible. But if you stew it, if you cook it for a long time, then it becomes just barely edible, and therefore it has tumas oichlin. So there is the answer to the Yitzchak Bar Nachman's question that yes, the same thing would be the same as far as a donkey's skin. And tumas nevelas namu tanenim. And if you're asking about tumas nevelas, that also we have a relevant braisa. Because the pasuk to when it talks about that a nevela is metame, the expression is binivlosa, that if a person touches binivlosa, he touches its carcass. Now, why does it have to say in its carcass? It could have said anegeya ba, so it means veloy ba'or, so it means not if a person touches the skin of the dead animal, veloy, with certain exceptions we're going to learn about in Perek Ha'orba Roitev, that sometimes the skin does transmit tumor as well. Sometimes it's what's called a shoimer, like it protects the flesh underneath it. We'll get into that point in detail in the ninth parak of Amasakta, that's the shem. Anyway, so v'loy ba'or, not if a person touches the skin, v'loy ba'atsoma, so the bones, v'loy ba'gidin, or the gidin, however we define gidin, v'loy ba'kanayim, or the horns, v'loy ba'tlafayim, or the hooves. Omar Rabba Bar Chana and Rabba Bar Chana and Omar Rabba Bar Rab Chana and Rava and Rabba Bar Rab Chana explains Lo Nitzulcha El Shasan Siket Dera. Really, there shouldn't be much of a chiddush in that. Of course, none of those parts are edible. But the chiddush would be even if you took these things, the bones or the gidim or whatever, and turned them into Siket Dera, into a side dish. You cook them together. You cook them for a long time together with spices. Even then, they still don't have Tumas Nevelas because they're not really considered. They're not really considered flesh. So therefore, they're not metamic Tumas Nevelas. Well, there you have the answer. So even if the skin was cooked for a long time, then the answer is it still doesn't have Tumas Nevelas. Now Tosfos points out that you have the Mishnah again in that Perikah Urva Roitim that talks about this point that the skin does not combine together for Tumas Nevelas. But the Tosfos says really the reason why the Gemara is bringing it over here, it wanted to bring Rabba Bar Rav Chana's point about when you made them into a stew with spices and all. In other words, the Mishnah would just tell us that they don't combine together. The Braisa and Rabba Bar Rav Chana's statement is telling us that even if you actually turn it into a food, nevertheless, it doesn't have too much nevelas. So what's your Yitzchak Bar Nachman's question? So the answer is, in fact, the Yitzchak Bar Nachman's question was about Tumas Eichlin, and now, we said very clearly in the Braisa that if you cooked it for a long time, then it has Tumas Eichlin, but the shiny earth, you could argue that maybe the skin of a donkey is much more disgusting and repulsive than the skin of any other kind of animal, so with other skins, then yes, if you stew them for a long time, then they can become just barely edible, and therefore they should have Tumas Eichlin, but maybe a donkey's skin is different. So maybe even the cooking and the machshava are not enough to make it have Tumas Eichlin. Okay. So the question is left open. Next, the Mishnah said Shulya Shuyasa. We said that if a Shulya started coming out of the mother, and then we said that it's also to eat because the head end or most of the babies may have come out, and then the Shita is not going to be mastered. So Amar Rav Elazar, Lo Shono El She'enim of Vlad. Now that would only apply if the amniotic sac comes out without a baby. So in other words, now there's the concern that the baby liquefied in there and is mixed in with the amniotic fluid, and we don't know what part came out. Avo Yeshim of Vlad, but if there was an actual baby together with it, Ein Choshen of Vlad Acher, then we'd even know. Now, normally, the baby will come out first, and then the amniotic sac will come out after it. But here we have the Shulya came out first. The Shulya came out first. So if we find a baby with it, then even though the baby and the baby is still inside, then the Shulya, says Rav Elazar, would actually be mutter. Ein Choshen Levad Acha. We're not concerned that there may have been a second baby in there that did liquefy and that the Shulya belongs to that baby. In other words, conceivably you could have, the same way as the baby could liquefy inside the amniotic sac could liquefy, the same way the sac itself could liquefy before the birth and not be visible. So would you have to be concerned? Normally the baby is going to rip through the sac and come out, and then the sac will be expelled afterwards. Here you have the sac coming out first. Rav Elazar says we don't have to be concerned when there's a baby over there, but things are in reverse order. That maybe it means, in other words, there were actually two babies over here, each one with its own shulya, and now the shulya that came out of here belonged to one baby that was liquefied, and then the other baby had a shulya that was liquefied. We don't have to be concerned about that, says Rav Elazar. Ain't Hutchin the Vlad Acher. We don't have to be concerned about another baby or another Shulya. We can say that this Shulya definitely belongs to this baby, and since the baby is still inside, and obviously therefore it didn't come out with the Shulya, then therefore the Shulya itself will be mutter to eat for those who are not Swedish. That's Rav Elazar. Rav Yochanan Amar. Rav Yochanan says no. Whether there's no baby in that shulya, or whether there is, a baby in the womb, chosh v'vlad acher, we do have to be concerned that there's another baby over there, and therefore the shulya is still going to be offered. So they want to ask Amy, you're telling me that Rav Elazar said it's mutter. Rav Yumi explained that what Rav Elazar's statement was actually doing machmir against Rav Yochanan, not to be maple. The way that we just presented it was that Rav Elazar is maple and allows the shulya to be eaten in this case, and Rav Yochanan does not. Well, it says you're right, then we reported it. We reported it backwards. We reported it backwards. What it is, here's the way it was supposed to be said. Amar Rav Elazar, loishano ela she'ena k'shura, not backwards, but differently. Amar Rav Elazar, loishano ela she'ena k'shura mizlam. This that we're saying in the Mishnah. That the shulya is also, is only when the shulya is not tied, is not attached to the baby. So now you have, in other words, a shulya that comes out, and there's no, and there's a baby in the womb, but it's not attached there. Then we have to be concerned that there were originally two babies, and one's, and in one the baby is gone, and the other one the shulya is gone. But if the shulya is attached to the baby that's in the womb in chushim b'vladacha, then you're not to be concerned about another baby because clearly the shulya belongs to this baby. But Rabbi Yochanan Amar, whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say, "Onu ein mano ela shulya b'lo vlad." We have a problem that with the shulya being usur only if the shulya has no baby at all. Aval yeshim b'vlad. But if there is a baby in the womb, being ein shulah b'vlad, whether it's attached to the baby or not, in chushim b'vladacha, you have no concern about another baby. Now we understand what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, that Rabbi Elazar was making a statement of Chumra, because now it comes out. Rabbi Yochanan is always, as long as there's a baby in the womb, then he's going to allow the shulya. The shulya came out before the baby, and that's unusual, and it's not even attached to the baby, and so we don't know whether it actually belonged to it. Rabbi Yochanan says that doesn't matter, and it's still fine. Whereas Rabbi Elazar is going to be machmir and say, in a case like that, it will work, and you can eat the shulya only if it's actually attached to the baby. Okay. The Gemara says Tanya Kavu said that Rabbi Elazar. Well, we learn a brayser like the way Rabbi Elazar said. Hamapelas behema chaya v'oiv. Hamapelas min behema chaya v'oiv. If a woman miscarries a baby that has the appearance of a domestic or wild animal or a bird, the shulya iman, and together now such a baby as we learned previously.
Okay.
And does not make her chome as a yeledes. We learned earlier, we had an opinion of Rav Meir of a while back that said that since the Torah says yitzira, since the Torah speaks of Hashem creating and uses the same word yitzira for animals and for people, therefore even if this malformed baby looks somewhat like an animal, then the mother will still be chome. She must be yeledes. But the Chachamim disagree, and the halacha is like the Chachamim. So now when she miscarries this kind of deformed baby. So she won't be tummy with the tumor of childbirth. Now what about now in this case? There was also the shulya in Mohan, there's also shulya together with it. So the Braisa says, is manshak shura behem, if the shulya is attached to that deformed baby in Choshen Levladacha, then we're not concerned that there may have been another baby in the shulya, and therefore, so if there was blood, she's going to be tummy anyway because of blood coming out from the uterus. But if there was no blood, then she's not going to be tummy at all. But ainuch shura behem, but the Braisa continues, if the shulya is not attached to this deformed baby, then we have to be concerned. Then we have to apply to her the chumras of two potential babies. Maybe the embryo that was forming in one shulya had originally at some point been formed to the extent where it's considered a baby in halacha, where at that point if she had miscarried it she would have become tummy later, and now even though afterwards it dissolved and liquefied in the amniotic fluid, she'd still be tummy because of that. And maybe on the other hand you have the other one that's malformed and looks like an animal or a bird or whatever. Maybe it had a shulya which also liquefied and disappeared. So in other words, then you have to be machmir. So we see that the Braisa is saying, and we see that the Braisa is drawing a distinction between whether the shulya is attached to the baby or not. So in this case that we're talking about chum shnei vlodes, then Rashi points out. In other words, the point is you might have had that it might have been a female, and therefore she'd have to keep the 14 days of chumah as if she had actually given birth to a girl. And then on the other hand, we're going to say she may not have the mei toihar. She's not going to have days of tahara as she would normally have, 66 days of tahara after the birth of a girl, because there may not have been a girl over here. There may not have been a baby here at all. So she has 14 days of tumah and no days of tahara. The point is, though, that the Braisa is drawing a distinction between whether it's attached to the baby or not. So we see that's Rabbi Elazar's point. In our case over here, whether the shuriyah is attached to the baby. Tosfos has some discussion about various ins and outs of this. Is there a difference in that regard between a woman and an animal as far as whether the shuriyah tends to separate from the baby and whether it tends to come out first, and so on and so forth. Okay. Next, the Mishnah said, "I'm a keres shepila." We said that if an animal is giving birth for the first time, and we don't know whether if it's a male, then it's going to have the kedusha of a bechor. So we said that if a miscarriage shuriyah, then we can throw it to the dogs. It's not also about no. So it was my time, and why not? After all, there was definitely a baby over here, and maybe it was a bechor. And the answer is Amar of Ikah, Brei Rami, Ruy Behemis Yodas Dovra Kaddish Rabbahira. We have to consider the statistics. Most animals do give birth to something that has the Kedusha of a Bukhara. And Miyut Yodas Dovra, Shaina Kaddish Rabbahira. But first of all, even among males, there's a minority of animals that give birth to something that doesn't have the Kedusha of the Bukhara. Well, my new Nidmet, namely an animal, a mutant that looks like a different species of animal. So an example would be, let's say, a female sheep. Rashi gives the word nidma. Rashi translates it with the word counterfeit. So in other words, it looks false. So for example, you have a female sheep, gave birth to a baby that looks like a goat, or vice versa, a female goat gave birth to something that looks like a sheep. Now we're going to learn in the Sechta Bechor that that does not have the kedusha of a Bechor. So first of all, you have to consider that you have a minority of some animals that give birth to a nigma, to a counterfeit animal like that, one that doesn't resemble the species as it's supposed to. Second of all, the holoyodus, nachtiskarim, nachtinakatus. Second of all, females that give birth, it's generally half males, half females. So now, smoich mi uta de nigma, lamachtinakatus. So now, if you combine together the minority of Nidmet, together with the 50% of females, the Havel is called a Miyota, so therefore males that are going to have Yushava Bechor end up being a Miyot, so, and we're not going to be concerned about the Miyot, therefore we can say that this Shuriya does not have the Yushava Bechor, and therefore we can throw it to the dogs. However, the Mishnah said, however, if it was an animal of Kodshim, then you have to bury it. My time, a Ruba Bar Mikdashu, because in that case, most animals born to Kodshim do have Kedusha, because the only one that wouldn't is Nidma, and Nidma is only a tiny minority, but by Mikdashim, whether it was a male or a female, either way, it's going to be Kaddish, so you can't say 100% of what's born to animals of Kaddishim are Kaddish, but you can say that an overwhelming majority are. In fact, Tosfos asks why indeed wouldn't a Nidma have Kedusha, and there's a different Gemara that seems to imply that they would. So Tosfos says, because there can be the distinction between when do we say these Vladis get Kedusha, when they're still in the womb, or only when they're born, which is a point that we're going to touch on it later in our Masechta, but we also have a lot of discussion about it, in particular in Masechta Tzmura, which we'll learn next year, as well. Okay, so therefore, by Mukdashin, if it miscarries a Shuriya, then the overwhelming likelihood is that something that would have had Kedusha, namely that there was an actual baby in there, whether male or female, the only exception would be Nidme, and therefore it's also Bahana, and therefore we have to bury him. Now, so we said in the Mishnah, the Ein Kovimosa, we said we can't bury it by a crossroads, and we can't hang it on a tree, because those are Darcheha Mori, those are superstitious practices of the Goyim. So Gemara says, Abaya and Rava, Yamei Chavaya. So you should know. Let's lay down a basic rule over here. Abaya and Rava both say, Kol Dover Sheyeshvei Refua. Any time that a person is doing something for healing, for example, medicinal potion, or for example, Rashi says a lachash, a spell that might be whispered over an injury, Ein Bo Mishum Darchei Hamori. There's no issue of Darchei Hamori in it. Ain't bird of four, but if there's no refuah involved here, for example, the animal miscarried. You're doing it so the animal shouldn't miscarry in the future, but you're not curing it right now. So then, yes, permission, Darchei Hamori, then there would be an issue of Darchei Hamori in doing it, and that's why our Mishnah is saying that you can't bury the Shuriya by a crossroads or hanging on a tree, because those are goyish, superstitious practices. One idea is why it might be mutter for refuah is that after all, when it comes to refuah, there's a lot of, even nowadays, there's a lot of cures that we don't really know how exactly they work. We just know that they work. So the Gemara says, Vatanya, but we don't know Raisa. Even Shemashir Peroisa, when you have a tree that loses its fruit prematurely, the fruit is falling off the tree before it's fully ripe, and the reason is because the tree has either too much fruit on it, or the fruit is, the fruit itself is too juicy and heavy, so it breaks off. So what you can do is you can paint the tree with a red paint, return it by avonim, and you can load it up with stones, and you're allowed to do that. It's not considered dar for hemori. So we have to ask, we're return it by avonim, we can understand why loading it up with stones, that's a naturalistic thing. That way its power is weakened. After all, what's going on? The tree obviously has too much vitality in it. Therefore, then it's transmitting that to the fruits, and therefore the fruits are ending up too heavy, and they end up breaking off and falling off prematurely. So we understand by weighing down the tree with stones, then you're doing that. El Sikra B'Sikra Amai, but why are you allowed to paint it with red paint? That's why is that? That's not for refuah. Wouldn't it be that family? And the answer is, the reason for the painting it red is it's considered a more naturalistic thing. This way people will see it, and they will daven for it. They will daven for the owner of this tree that should stop food supercharged. You see from that a couple of things. First of all, you see that we can consider that to be a naturalistic thing, that people will daven for something and Hashem will make it happen. We see that that's not considered Darkei Hemori, just the opposite, that shows B'tochen and Hashem. We also see the sensitivity that a Yid had for another one in those times, that you see somebody like this. Normally, you would think nowadays, somebody's tree is not so healthy, big deal. But back then, it was understood. You see somebody's tree is not healthy, and it's brought to your attention by the red paint, then you're immediately going to be motivated to daven on behalf of the person that the tree should regain its health. As we find to the Tanya, like we learn in Abraisa, the Mitzvah, the positive of Tomei Yikra, he has to cry out Tomei, Tzorech Lo Yidiyah L'Rachmin, but Tzorech Lo Yidiyah L'Rachmin means he has to inform the public that he's a Mitzvah, the Rabbin, Vakshim Olav Rachmin, and this way the Rabbin will daven for Rachmin for him. Similarly, a person who has anything negative happen to him, he has to inform it to the public. The rabbin of Vakshim Olav Rachman, and the rabbin will daven for Rachman for him. And that's that. There's no nichush or gavke hamori or anything like that. And it's a good thing to do when it promotes avas yisrael between people. So the Gemara finishes off. Omer Ravina, keman tolinen kubsa bedikla. Which opinion then are we following when we go and we hang a cluster of dates on a palm tree, where also you have the palm tree is losing its fruit prematurely, and then therefore people should daven, then it shouldn't. Keman kihai tana. Which opinion is that following? This tana who says that you're allowed to do it in a way that's gonna evoke people to daven for rachmas for it. Now, an interesting point then is, in that case, then what about, why can't you hang the shuya on the tree? Wouldn't it be the same thing? And the answer is, because who's going to know what animal it came from? It's one thing over here. You hang the dates on the very tree itself. So if they're falling off of, then it's a sign to people to daven on behalf of this tree, in the same way we said when you paint the tree red. But just to hang a shuya on a tree and nobody's going to know what animal it came from to be able to daven for it, that not. So therefore, that would be considered darkei hamori, and that's what our Mishnah is saying. You can't do that. Hey, Padron Alok Behemah HaMakcha.